You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
When we think of ancient pyramids, the ones at Giza usually come to mind, but it might surprise you to learn that there are hundreds of pyramids along the Nile that weren't built by the Egyptians. They're located in Nubia, ancient Egypt's neighbor to the south, and they are among the many archaeological treasures there that have only recently been unearthed. In his book called Ancient Nubia, African Kingdoms on the Nile, acclaimed New York Times photographer Chester Higgins captures images of the ruins of this less well-known culture. It's published by the American University in Cairo Press, and it recently won a prose award for Best Archaeology and Anthropology Book. I'm very pleased that it brings Chester Higgins back to our show. Hello.
Thank you very much. Pleased to be here.
Prose is all capitals. It's
yes.
What does it stand for? You don't know.
Okay. I don't know.
Yeah, but anyway, congratulations on the award.
The Egyptologist, I must say, I've illustrated this book for a team of Egyptologists headed by Dr. Margaret Fisher, Peter Lacavera, Salima Askerim, and they were very excited about this award. They sent it to me, and it's a part of it's very important in their world and in the written the world of the academics. So I was very happy.
Well, you're not an archaeologist, but how much did you know? You had to know what to shoot, right?
I had to know what to shoot. I'm not an archaeologist, but I'm in love with African culture. So I take it upon myself to do the research of culture, and I've been, and since my first trip to Egypt and Ethiopia in 73, I've amassed a huge research library that deals with this history.
Do you do this when you're on sabbatical from the New York Times?
Yes, I do it. I do the reading while I'm working. You know, I have my evenings. But during my sabbatical, or really my long vacations, is when I actually do the work.
What modern countries would have been within Nubia's borders?
Sudan and Egypt.
Because so it's the south of Egypt and the north of Sudan?
Right. And in the old days, you would have had part of Kush and Ethiopia in it. But now it would be Sudan and Egypt.
Are there modern peoples who are the descendants of the ancient Nubians?
Well, they are. You will find some in Egypt and Aswan. And then you will find them along the Nile in northern Sudan.
And do they maintain some of the ancient traditions?
I have not found it to be the case because they have now been all they're now Muslims. And the nearest thing that people talk about is from the old way is the town above opposite Khartoum where they have these weekend sort of dervishes. But I haven't found this.
Now, why is Nubia less explored as an ancient culture than Egypt, Babylon, Asia Minor, Mesoamerica?
I think there's a couple of reasons. One is that because the monuments are not accessible to people, and
why aren't they?
Well, in Egypt, you do have a lot of roads, and you have the river, and the monuments are close to the river. In Nubia, the river has moved away from the monuments. It could be several miles away, and you don't have the roads, so that you are really getting there by land cruisers and GPS.
And then you have to know where to dig. Is it obvious where the archaeological sites might be found?
Well, the biggest sites, yes, it would be. But there are newer sites coming online all the time where people are, they see mounds and they start digging and lo and behold, they find something. The other reason I want to say is that Sudan politically aligned itself with during the Cold War period with the East. So that you didn't have the Western scientists coming in. You only had the Eastern Europeans, the Polish, the Germans, what have you. And they have been doing the work in Sudan. And now that is beginning to change. There are so many sites to uncover, but there just hasn't been the personnel and the interest and money to do it.
And money is an important part of this. I suspect that because it isn't part of what we think of as the ancient world, people didn't want to put as much money into it.
That has an awful lot to do with it, and I think also it's overshadowed by Egypt because Egypt is such a sexier place anthropologically.
Was the Nile as important to ancient Nubia as it was to Egypt?
Yes. In fact, the Nile was the corridor of exchange of things, of goods and things coming out of Africa into to the northern partner, trading partner, Egypt. And that was why it was so important for the Egyptians to maintain a free flow of goods, and why it was important for many of the Egyptian pharaohs to go to war with the Nubians when taxation or other issues became onerous to that trade.
But the Nile doesn't just flow freely throughout its course. In this area, aren't there a lot of rapids, cataracts?
Yes, there are. But the cataracts, if you're starting from Aswan with Cataract 1, you have cataracts. And for the public, let me say, cataracts are huge boulders within the river that makes it impossible for a ship to pass. So they solved this problem, though, in the past. The Egyptians made their boats out of short oars, and they attached them with rope. So when they reach the cataract, everybody would get off, take off all the cargo, and then disassemble the boat. Then march the boat parts and everything up beyond the cataract, reassemble it, and then continue on.
And what role did that all play in ancient Nubian culture?
Well, it was the role of trade. And you can see, and the reason we know this is because when you are there at these cataracts, you will see underneath huge rocks, because this would take a few weeks, where the original Kirua was here, so the symbols, where people were made these signs into the rock of their name, the year that they were there, and the time of the particular pharaoh and what they were doing.
Was most of the interaction between Nubia and Egypt trade? Wasn't there a time when Nubia actually invaded Egypt?
Well, yes. Well, there was always problems with the southern neighbors. And there was a time when Nubia was asked in the 17th dynasty to help the Hyksos to essentially destroy the Thebans. And that didn't happen. But since the 18th dynasty, because of that, the succeeding pharaohs always tried to keep a military presence in Nubia. But when Egypt essentially was down on their needs, then the Nubians were able to invade them from the south again.
But we're talking about people of color. They don't look like the people in northern Egypt. Were distinctions made at the time?
Well, you know, this is a...
How much do we know from the hieroglyphic record? Excuse me, and did the Nubians have a similar written language?
Well, first thing is first. You know, Egypt has a long history. And the original Egyptian culture is an African, indigenous African culture that became overlaid because it also became an international culture. They ruled the world, and then they were invaded in those invasions and occupations. So we have the hieroglyphic language. We have the demotic language. But we also have the hieroglyphic language among the Nubians when they were essentially Egyptianized by the Egyptians when all the young princes were sent there. But we also have the Meroitic script, which, unlike the hieroglyphic, we do not have a Rosetta Stone of. So we can't really tell what it says. And the longest script of Meroitic script is at the Boston Museum of Fine Arts, where you have, actually in this country, the best collection of Nubian artifacts is there.
If you would like to see some of Chester Higgins' photos from the book, you can go to our show page, excuse me, at WNYC.org. We have a slideshow there. So what you said earlier suggests that after the Cold War ended, more archaeologists started coming into this area. The Germans have a great tradition of archaeology. Schliemann did find Troy, but... They probably were limited in their funds during the communist years.
Well, that's true, but at least they had a presence. The Germans had a presence, the Poles had a presence, and much of what has been the work that has been done in during the Cold War period in Sudan was done by those scientists. Now, you have Egyptian scientists and some Americans who are going in. You know, it's hard to get into Sudan. It's not the easiest country to get into. They're paranoid about a lot of things. It requires, if you're going to go there, it requires someone who's okay with camping out. And it's not living in a hotel.
And that's what your experience was. How many sites were you able to visit?
Well, over a course, I went three separate trips for 6 weeks at a time. So the first year, I went up two-thirds of the way to the Egyptian border, the first 2 years, because it was so much there. And then the last year, I went all the way up to Soleb, which is just south of Wadi Halfa.
Now, how much do we know about life in ancient Nubia? Were they farmers like the Egyptians along the Nile, or did they hunt animals? Did they raise livestock?
Well, one of the great things about this book is that it talks about that, and we have a combination of things. Not only were they fishermen and farmers and had livestock, but they did all those things. And what made them so valuable to Egypt was they had the biggest supply of gold in the ancient world in any place.
Doesn't Nubian actually mean something about
Noob,
gold?
Noob, in the ancient Egyptian tongue, means gold.
Now, they also had elephants.
And elephants that everybody wanted to buy because they were used as the original war chariots. So that if you had elephants, you could you had a tank.
Mm-hmm. And later we see that when Carthage invades Rome, they use the elephants. I don't know whether they were getting them from Nubia.
Who knows? But it was a big trading.
How much do we know about their political system? Was it similar to the Egyptians?
Well, it was similar in the sense that it was seems to be a theocratic base, where the top guy being the pharaoh was also the head of the church. Now, the religion is another issue, and just touching on, and this book touches on it, is that we aren't quite sure what the religion was in Nubia before it was influenced by the Egyptians.
But they had temples that were uncovered.
Well, they didn't have temples until the Egyptian influence. That's not to say that they didn't have celebratory venues, but they were not as temples. But the temples came later. And then after the second intermediate period of the Egyptians, they then reverted back to their indigenous religion.
We even have the great temple of Ramses II in Nubia, don't we?
Well, you're talking about the Temple of Aswan, mm-hmm. the Ramses II.
Were things lost when they built the Aswan Dam? Because there was talk about trying to move some temples, but I would imagine that if there are other things that were buried, they're buried under many feet of water.
Not only feet of water, but hundreds of feet of silt that has come down from the Nile. Reisner, who was at Harvard at the time, who led the American expedition campaigns, came out with incredible stuff. But I was there during the 73, and I saw where you had these copper dams that were set up around the Temple of Philae, which was in the lake and before it was moved out. But only so much could be salvaged because not enough people responded, not enough governments responded to be able to take out more.
Perhaps because this was an area that the world was less interested in at the time.
And you're right. And part of it, I think, had to do with the fact that Nasser had turned off the West and had those political issues going, and embracing Russia, so he had those issues going on.
Were the Nubian kings similar to the Egyptian pharaohs, dynastic?
They were dynastic meaning family, yes. Mm. They were dynastic.
Did they have cities?
And they had cities. They had major cities, like Gebel Barkal was one, Napata, and Meroe, and there are several others, Sola, but they had major cities.
Well, what you've been suggesting is first they had a unique culture, and then over time, they became more and more influenced by the Egyptians, and in the end, they developed some kind of a synthesis with all of the things that they got from the Egyptians.
Yes. And another important thing about them, too, people talk about the 25th dynasty. When they came back to invade Egypt, when Egypt was down on its knees, they've somehow brought back the last renaissance of the Egyptian religion. These people who had been probably had Egyptian religion shoved down their throat came back and reasserted it on the behalf of the Egyptians. So that we're discovering all of this 25th dynasty in tombs in Karnak and in Luxor that speaks to the greatness of this particular time.
And what happened with religion in Egypt? Eventually, Islam took over, although there was a Greek period. We know that there was a Jewish and Christian tradition in Ethiopia, mm-hmm. but what was happening here? Is this all? Did it just maintain the ancient Egyptian style religion until Islam came along?
Well, two things. In this isolation, it seemed to maintain its own indigenous faith, which, from my research, I called spirit world theology. And this maintained itself until about 330 A.D., when the new king of Ethiopia, Emperor Izana, who had been converted into religion at 324, took it upon himself in the name of his new faith to essentially snuff the light out of Meroe. And he sent his troops, and Estella's behind to show this. He sent his troops, he invaded the country, he slaughtered the people, he put an end to it.
Christianity.
Yes.
And then Islam came along as well.
Then Islam came along.
And right now that's still, we have Sudan with a mix of religions,
with
including
mix,
some ancient religions.
Well, you won't find Christianity. I mean, so the Islam is not very tolerant of Christianity. You, in fact, there was a period during the Coptic time of Egypt when you had a lot of churches and monasteries in Sudan. And you find now in Sudan these things, the remnants of these things that have been destroyed.
Now, the pyramids that are illustrated in this book are obviously not as large as the ones that we find in Egypt. But did they serve the same kind of function?
Well, let me answer the distinction. There's three different major distinctions. First, you're right, they're not as large. Secondly, the Egyptian pyramids are 45-degree angle. These are 60-degree angles.
Third, so they're much sharper.
Much sharper. Third, the Egyptian pyramids had rooms in them. These do not. The tombs are underneath. And so I guess the final thing is that in terms of in a spirit view world, what was the role of the pyramid anyway? And it seems as though, from my research, that all of these people who believed in the spirit world felt that the most powerful force in nature was sun. And these pyramids all had white limestone skin. So they were reflecting the sun. It was their way of bringing a piece of the Creator down to earth, making a place very sacred.
The book Ancient Nubia, African Kingdoms on the Nile, edited by Marjorie M. Fisher, Peter Lakavara, Salima Ikram, and Sue Doria, with a foreword by Zahi Hawass, and incredible photographs by my guest, Chester Higgins, Jr. Thank you so much for being with us. The book, by the way, is published by the American University in Cairo Press.
Thank you very much.